Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop, where we bring you all the news from Washington, D.C. that the government does not want you to know. And today we're going to talk about the most powerful man in Congress and an attempt to take him down. Who am I talking about? Who is the most powerful person, I should say, in Congress? Well, it's not Senator Frist, the majority leader of the Senate, and that's because in the Senate, the minority, the Democrats, still has a lot of institutional powers. And it's not Dennis Hastert, the Speaker of the House, no, although he is the titular head of the Republican Party, the head of the House. Insiders know that Hastert really isn't controlling things. He isn't really carrying the ball. The most powerful man in Congress, in my view and in the view I think of most insiders in Congress, is Representative Tom DeLay, the majority leader of the House, the number two Republican, but the guy in control. A guy so in control that his nickname is the Hammer. In fact, we saw the Hammer at work just yesterday when they had a bill to modify some of the worst provisions of the Patriot Act. And the Republicans were not supporting that. But they had enough, the Democrats had enough support to actually modify the bill, to actually modify the Patriot Act. The Hammer went to work. He went past the time limit, started twisting members' arms, and got to a tie vote. In fact, that's going to be the subject of my Monday show with Congressman Jerry Nadler. But today's show, I want to talk about some of the secret goings-on, some of the nefarious goings-on of Representative Tom DeLay. And I've got on the line a guest who is Congressman Chris Bell of Texas. And Congressman Chris Bell has done the incredible. He has filed an ethics complaint against the man I call the most powerful man in Congress, Tom DeLay. And the ethics complaint is quite severe. He accuses Tom DeLay, at least in the press release, of bribery, extortion, fraud, money laundering, and abuse of power. And in the complaint itself, it talks about bribery, it talks about a quid pro quo, it talks about money laundering, and it talks about Representative Tom DeLay improperly using the Department of Homeland Security to track down wayward Texas Democrats when he was trying to gerrymander the Texas legislature. What is this all about? Well, my guest will tell you. Again, his name is Congressman Chris Bell of Texas. He's a freshman member of Congress, and I want to welcome him to my show. Welcome, Congressman Bell.
Thanks a lot, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, you've really done an incredible thing. Our listeners may not know, I know you know, that there was an unofficial truce, that there were a number of ethics complaints filing back and forth in the 80s between Democrats and Republicans. I remember Newt Gingrich had a challenge to Speaker Tom Foley's book deal, which I don't know whether that was suspicious or not, but it's nothing like money laundering or bribery. And then the both parties had a truce for a little while, not written down, but unofficial. Can you tell me a little bit more about that truce and why you decided to break it?
Well, if there was a truce, and if I did break it, then good.
Okay.
It needed to be broken. You don't have a truce on ethics in the House of Representatives. It is the people's house, and the American people expect their representatives to be able to police themselves. And I just wasn't going to turn a blind eye to Mr. DeLay's clearly unethical conduct anymore, and that's why I went ahead and move forward with the filing of the complaint.
And one of the things I think that distinguishes this radio show from a lot of others is that we like to give the facts so that people can decide for themselves. It's not just a question of rhetoric or spin. Give me some of the things Tom DeLay has done that you contend are bribery or money laundering or unethical.
Well, there are three basic charges in the complaint, Mark, and the first one has to do with a utility company out of Kansas named Westar. And Westar has no dealings with Texas whatsoever. But last year, or a couple years ago, when they were looking for favorable treatment in the energy bill, they decided to donate $25,000 to Mr. DeLay's Texas Political Action Committee that he had set up to help candidates running for state office here in the Lone Star State. And then, and sure enough, they received the favorable treatment that they were looking for, and the amendment that they wanted included in the energy bill was placed in the bill. We think it was clearly a quid pro quo. There are emails that have been found on Westar, emails that say that they were looking to find for a place at the table, and they knew they had to go through Mr. DeLay in order to accomplish that goal.
Here's something that I've never understood, and I want to throw the phone lines open, too, and give folks a chance to call in. Mr. Bell is only going to be here for the first half hour, so if you want to talk to him personally, you're going to have to call in early. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-577-2667, or you can send an email if you like to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. Here's something I guess I've never understood about corporate contributions in general. It seems to me that if they do succeed in buying influence, then it's bribery. And if they don't succeed in buying influence, it's a waste of corporate money. I've never had anyone be able to explain to me why it isn't either a waste or bribery. In Westar's case, you said they wanted a seat at the table. Tell me.
Well, they made it very clear. I mean, this was all part of their strategy. They laid out who they were going to contribute to, and one of those individuals was Tom DeLay. And sure enough, they donate $25,000 to this Texas Political Action Committee, even though they're a Kansas utility and have no dealings with Texas whatsoever.
I see.
The second count has to do with that Political Action Committee. It's known as TREMPAC. Texans for Republican Majority, that Mr. DeLay set up, and also being investigated by a grand jury in Travis County, Texas. In Texas, the law is very clear that you can't use corporate contributions for political expenses. You can use corporate contributions for administrative expenses. And what Mr. DeLay and his associates did, they simply recategorized certain expenses such as fundraising and polling as administrative so that they could use these corporate dollars to pay for what were clearly political expenses. They also found themselves in a position where they wanted to donate $190,000 to various candidates for the state legislature here in Texas, and they had corporate money, but they didn't have enough individual money in order to do that. So what they did, they sent $190,000 of this so-called soft money up to Washington, and then the Republican National Committee sent it back down to Texas, and the amount, of course, was $190,000 worth of contributions.
So it sounds,
hence the money laundering.
It sounds to
allegation.
Me like then that it's not just Tom DeLay, but the Republican National Committee that's implicit in this.
Well, they obviously utilized them to channel the money through them, but our contention is that Mr. DeLay runs this enterprise and he sits as the head of it, and they don't do anything without him signing off on it. The last, so we can just finish up on the complaint, Mark,
sure,
is the abuse of power allegation, and that goes back to something that you probably covered on your show.
We did, in fact,
last year about the walkout, and that was when the legislators in Texas were trying to stop the redistricting, the very controversial redistricting plan of Mr. DeLay's, from going through in the state legislature, and they went to Ardmore so that they couldn't be brought back to the Capitol to vote on it.
Which is in Oklahoma, just throw out there. It's out of the state of Texas. Go
right
ahead, Congressman.
Right, and then the rules of the House are quite clear, the U.S. House are quite clear, that you can't intervene with a federal agency for a political purpose. Well, clearly, this was intramural to the state of Texas. It had absolutely nothing to do with official policy in Washington, and he was calling the FAA and the Department of Homeland Security and the Department of Justice, trying to get all of them to intervene, and some of them actually did. And so from that comes the abuse of power allegation. So that's the complaint. And what's interesting as we move forward, and of course my hope is that the Ethics Committee will take the responsible route and call for a full-scale investigation, and they're not limited to these counts that we've alleged in our complaint. Once the investigation goes forward, they can open it up to whatever might be uncovered.
Well, there's so many different things that I want to cover here in the details, because I like to get into the details. The details of Westar, the details of the money laundering, and absolutely the details of the Texas gerrymandering, which actually is going to have a tremendous effect on the next upcoming elections. Indeed, that just redrawing those lines, which the Texas Democrats in the legislature there unfortunately failed to prevent, will probably lose us 5 seats in the House. Perhaps even including yours, Congressman Bell.
Well, I've already lost mine.
Right, in a primary.
He succeeded in getting rid of me in a little bit of a different manner. They made my district and redrew it so that it would be an African-American district, and so that I would have a primary opponent. And, in fact, that's exactly what happened last March. And so he's already succeeded in eliminating me, and then 5 of my colleagues from the Democratic delegation from Texas will face contest this coming fall, as you point out.
Well, I'd like to deal with the charges one at a time. Let me go ahead and give the numbers out again. It's 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. Let's start with Westar, which you said is a Kansas utility. What was it they were trying to get from the federal government?
It was an amendment that would just impact them, and I don't recall all of the details of the amendment, but in fact, when it was being considered before the Energy and Commerce Committee, the now chair of that committee, Joe Barton, said that this is an amendment that will only impact Westar.
And so,
made
in other
very
words,
clear that it was specifically designed to aid them. Then, when all of this became public, because I believe some of these individuals from Westar have actually been charged with wrongdoing, once it became public and these emails became public that they had charted this course and designed this strategy to buy a seat at the table, then suddenly the amendment was taken down and removed from the bill.
Of course.
But that really is neither here nor there, because after you've been caught, it really doesn't make any difference your action is.
Do you know how much this amendment would have aided Westar?
Oh, it would have been millions. And I forget
millions.
The exact estimation, but if it had been included, it would have saved that one company millions of dollars.
That's one of the things I've never really understood about bribery is, it's such a good deal. You pay $25,000 and you get millions back. You know, folks, that's 100 times on your return. It's so easy to buy the majority leader for $25,000. You'd think he'd charge a higher price.
But Mark, let's talk about that for a moment, because I do think it's important, and that gets thrown out a lot, and I realize a lot of people are very cynical about the process, but what I think most people also realize is that politics is expensive and running for office is expensive, and if you're going to advertise on television and put up billboards and send out mail, there has to be a process for paying for that. But most people that I know, reputable people that are involved in public service, are very careful not to ask for any type of quid pro quo and say, if you give me this and this is what you want are trying to accomplish, then I'll do this for you. Those discussions are not had by ethical members of the House of Representatives. And if they are being had, either by Republicans or Democrats, then that's why we have this ethics committee system in place, so that those types of things can be investigated. And that's what I think needs to be done in the case of Tom DeLay and Westar.
I've got to tell you, I don't know if some of our listeners are shocked or not. In fact, I think a lot of people are very cynical about Congress. But I think one of the shocking things is that there even are bills out there that only affect one company. It seems to me that Congress should be legislating for the good of everyone, not to help one company save millions of dollars. Is this a tax break? Is that what this is?
Well, you'd be right. Usually when you're talking about the Republicans, you are talking about bills that will aid a big number of large corporations and not just one. So I guess this was a little unusual in that regard.
Let me,
was a tax break, and I apologize. I forget exactly how the wording of the amendment.
That's fine. I mean, I think the message is clear. They pay $25,000, and we taxpayers lose
some
millions.
Well, it's actually more than that. And in fact, they had it lined up. I think the whole package that they had put together was over $50,000, with individual contributions going to some other members of Congress and other people that they thought they needed in order to have that seat at the table.
Let me read you a couple emails that have already been sent in. I got an email from Fred, doesn't say where he's from. He writes, I have to say the current state of the Congress is very disheartening. I would like to believe that most people enter politics for altruistic reasons. All I can see today are people with such a strong misplaced loyalty to their party that they are acting against the interests of our nation. They protect the president and they protect DeLay. At what point does basic decency kick in? Fred, my answer is where Congressman Bell kicks in is where basic decency kicks in. That's why I'm very proud to have him on my show.
Well, and we'll see. Because the Ethics Committee is the one committee in Congress that's evenly balanced between Republicans and Democrats. They have a very distinguished chair, Joel Heffley from Colorado, who has an excellent reputation. And my sense is that the committee will want to do the right thing and go forward with investigation. It's not my job to sit as judge and jury. I feel like I've done my duty in bringing the complaint forward. And obviously, I believe that Mr. DeLay is guilty of the acts that I've alleged in the complaint, or I wouldn't have brought it. But that's not my ultimate decision. It is for the Ethics Committee, and I do think at the very least these very serious allegations need to be fully investigated, and that's my hope in the coming weeks.
Congressman Bell, what exactly is the process? The Ethics Committee consists, is it 4 and 4 or 5 and 5?
5 and 5.
5 Republicans, 5 Democrats, and then their staff is required once you raise the ethics complaint to look into this? Is that
well,
right?
We jump the first small hurdle, and that is for them to pass on the form of the complaint and say that it meets the criteria for an ethics complaint, and then after they decide that, then Mr. DeLay is formally notified that the complaint has been filed, even though obviously
he
already knew.
Right.
But that happened a couple of weeks ago, and they said that it did pass the jump the form hurdle, and so now the clock is ticking, and he has 30 days to either respond to the complaint or choose not to respond. And if he chooses not to respond, then it's considered a complete denial of the complaint, or he can go into as much detail as he wants in answering the allegations. Obviously, since we've, you know, been very public in what we've done, we would hope that he would do the same, because there's a lot of concern on the part of the American people. And what's interesting, Mark, is that throughout this, since we brought it forward a couple of weeks ago, all they've really done is engaged in character assassination and the shoot the messenger.
I can't say I'm surprised.
They knew they would, and I'm a lawyer, and I know the strategy. When the facts aren't on your side, you try to create a diversion, and they don't want to talk about the complaint or the facts contained therein. But at the end of the day, this isn't going to be about me or my motivation for filing it or anything else. It's going to be about the facts, and I think the facts are very damaging and very serious.
Well, I have to agree with you, Congressman Bell. I'm a lawyer as well, and I found when they started attacking you, meaning me, the lawyer personally or my client personally, that's when you knew they had absolutely nothing to back up their charges. And I find that I debate Bush representatives all the time. In fact, I do as part of the Close-Up Foundation. And when they start attacking me personally, I just stand up and I say, you know what? When they attack me personally, I just say that's a concession that I've won. So I couldn't agree with you more. I do want to go to the phones. If you want to call in, it's 877-57-SCOOP. Ask away. Let's find out what the charges are against the most powerful man in Congress. That's my term, by the way, not Congressman Bell's, just to be clear. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Congressman Bell of Texas.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Good. What's your first name? Where are you from?
This is Brian from New Jersey.
Hey, Brian from New Jersey. What's your question or comment?
My question is, when the time has expired for the vote and all the votes are supposedly in,
yep,
how do they get an extension on time if the vote doesn't go their way? How does that work? I don't understand.
Well, that's a great question. It's not related to the ethics complaint, but it's related to something that Tom DeLay does every day.
Exactly. That's why I asked him about it.
Go ahead, Mr. Bell.
Let me respond to it, and you might be interested if you have internet access, and I assume most people do in this day and age. Go and run a Google search for Rules Matter, and look. There'll be a couple of selections, and you'll see an op-ed that I wrote last November about the rules, because the first blatant. It actually wasn't the first, and it was the most blatant, and that was when we were considering the Medicare legislation, and they left the vote open for 3 hours.
Which I reported on my show right after it happened, I'm proud to say, but go ahead, Mr. Bell.
But what's really interesting about this whole dynamic is that back when the Republicans wanted to take back the majority and were crying about Jim Wright and his treatment of the Republican minority, one of the things that inflamed them the most is when he kept a vote open for 45 minutes one time so that some people could change their votes and the Democrats could carry the day. And when they came forward with their contract for America or contract on America, whichever you prefer.
I prefer the latter.
That was one of the things that, you know, they were going to be different and they were going to run the House in such a more ethical manner and they were going to obey all the rules. Well, when the rules become inconvenient, they simply choose to thumb their nose. And they claim that they can keep a vote open for as long as they can, basically pointing back to the days when they were in the minority. And every time, I'll never forget the first close vote, I think it was when we were voting on President Bush's tax cut for the rich. I was very excited because we had defeated the bill by a couple of votes. I don't remember the exact margin, and I'm a freshman, we hadn't won any votes. You don't win many votes when you're in the minority. And one of the veteran members said, don't worry, they'll switch it.
Yep.
I said, huh?
Yep.
And he said, just hold on, watch.
Yep.
And sure enough, they kept the vote open, and they had said we were going to have this very strict 15-minute time limit for voting. Well, what he forgot to say was that we'd have a strict 15-minute time limiting unless it worked against us. And so what we've seen is them basically just thumb their nose at it and keep it open as long as they want so that they can twist arms and get the votes that they need. And so here we go again. It hasn't happened this year because there was so much controversy surrounding the Medicare legislation.
Well, except it just happened Thursday with the Patriots.
But then it happened last night for the first time since then. It seems like we're back on the same course. And nerves are raw in the House of Representatives right now. People are sick and tired of the conduct of the Republican majority. And basically, if you go back and study what was going on in the last years when they were in the minority, they basically turned everything on its head and are doing exactly what they were complaining about the Democrats doing back then, which I would admit probably wasn't right. Was an abuse of the power back then. But now for them to do the exact same thing is really rather incredible.
Well, I remember myself when I was a staffer working as legislative counsel in Congress, it was the trade bill. It was definitely a trade bill, and I remember the Democrats won, and then we all knew it was close enough that Tom DeLay would get out there and switch the votes, and he was going around twisting arms, making promises to people, oh, you'll get this piece of pork, you'll get this piece of pork, and I forget the name of the congressman, I think he's from North Carolina.
Robin Hayes, yes, was in tears.
He was in tears.
Yeah.
Tom DeLay, you know, metaphorically twisted his arms so hard the guy was crying.
Yeah, it's the fast track legislation.
That's right, it's fast track. Trading his vote. So I guess the answer, Brian, is when you're in the majority, you make the rules. And when you want to break the rules, all you have to do as the majority is break the rules, because the only people who can call you on it is a majority. So if you're the majority in Congress, and you want to break your own rules, the only one that's going to complain is the majority. And as you can see, no one will complain. So that's technically how they do it. Congressman Bell's right. The Democrats did it once, they probably shouldn't have. And Republicans have made it an art form. I don't know how many times they've done it, but I'm sure it's at least half a dozen.
Well, they do it every time that there's a close vote.
Yeah, every single time, in fact, there's a close vote.
And they've lost, and then they go and break arms to make people switch. And what I think the larger question is, Mark, and the larger issue is this overall ethical climate that we're creating, not only in the House of Representatives, but in the United States. In my op-ed, you'll see that I talk about my son in a game called Yu-Gi-Oh! You may have seen it. It's a popular kids game, and my son really doesn't know the rules, but he likes to play. Well, he always wins because he makes up the rules as you go along.
Exactly.
And I've suggested that he would be an excellent Republican congressman someday.
Hey, Brian, I got another email. I'm going to read it to you, but I want you to hold on your answer because we have to go to a commercial break. The email is quite simple. It's from Gordon in Michigan. He says, what kinds of reprisals can Congressman Bell expect for his stand against the ethics truce? I want you to hold on to your answer and hang on while we get more calls and go to commercial break. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. 877-57-SCOOP, or send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. And coming up at the very end of the hour, I'm going to talk about a special plan the Democratic vice presidential candidate, Senator John Edwards, had to fight terrorism that predated 9/11. That's up at the end of the show. For now, we wait your calls on taking down the most powerful man in Congress here on the Inside Scoop. Back with more right after this.
The Timken Company, based in Canton, Ohio, makes steel and other industrial products, and last year, it was the proud recipient of a visit by His Eminence, George W. Bush. The Prez had traveled to Ohio, a state that's up for grabs in this fall's election, to hype the value of all the tax giveaways he's passed for the rich. He went to Canton to claim that those giveaways would trickle down from the rich to create jobs for middle-class America, and he needed a good visual for his televised speech. Timken's factory was the perfect made-for-TV backdrop. A crowd of Timken's hard-hatted blue-collar workers was dutifully assembled for Bush. The boss man, Tim Timken himself, was on stage beaming with pride and nodding in approval at George's every sentence. Why wouldn't he? Tim has long been a major financial backer of both Bush presidents. Now, fast forward to May of this year. Just months after Georgia's highly publicized rooster strut in Canton, Tim announced that he was closing three of his U.S. factories, eliminating 1,300 jobs, and moving production to low-wage centers elsewhere, including overseas. Curiously, there was no national media coverage of this development, which made a mockery of Bush's earlier political posturing. What's to happen to the workers who were made to serve as props for Georgia's pitch about the power of trickle-down economics? I have no idea what I'm going to do, says Scott Anderson, 41 years old and a 23-year loyal worker at Temkin. There are just no good job opportunities left in this community. Scott added that he now couldn't pay for the college education of his kids. I want a better America, as my parents did for me, he says. Ironically, a Temkin spokesman coldly replied, it's a business issue, not a political issue. This is Jim Hightower saying he's dead wrong about that. By stiffing America's middle class, Bush and Tim Temkin are playing with political dynamite.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Great news from Viagra Sildenafil Citrate. Now there's a card that can get you Viagra for free. Introducing the Value Card for Viagra. With it, every time you fill six eligible prescriptions, you'll get the next one completely free. There's no other Viagra, and there's no other offer like this. To get your card, ask your pharmacist or healthcare provider, or go to ViagraCard.com. See the value again and again with the Value Card for Viagra. Go to ViagraCard.com today. Offer may not be available in all areas.
Welcome back to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop, bringing you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. And here's a story that I think has gotten very little press, really surprising little press. It's about an attempt to take down a man I consider the most powerful man in Congress. And I don't think I'm the only one that thinks that. He's Majority Leader Tom DeLay. He's the guy known for twisting arms and all those close votes. He's also known for using whatever he could to gerrymander the state lines in Texas to create a Congress more to his liking. And I've got on the air Congressman Chris Bell of Texas, who has filed an ethics complaint accusing him of money laundering, bribery, and, of course, using the Department of Homeland Security to help in his gerrymander effort. And it's quite a risky move. As I said, I had a question from Gordon of Michigan, wants to know what kind of reprisals you can expect, Congressman. I guess since you've lost in the primary, there's not much he can do against you, is there?
Well, not a whole lot. I mean, we knew that he would open up his attack machine on us, and we said that from the start. And really, I think, Mark, what you'll see with this story is a lot of starts and stops. There was a lot of coverage when we filed the complaint, and then if the Ethics Committee moves forward, I think they're the media certainly had, like, they, it's not as if they've turned a blind eye to the story. The New York Times has editorialized in our favor and wants to see it go forward. Austin American Statesman, the Houston Chronicle, a lot of other papers are weighing in, writing stories and covering it. So I've been pleased by that. As far as reprisals, it was interesting because they seemed to misstep every step of the way. Their most immediate contact was from from Representative Doolittle, who said that, well, this will just open up an atmosphere of you kill my dog, I'll kill your cat. And then they immediately backed away from that because
they didn't
kill
your cat.
They would be accused of just seeking retaliation if they decided to go forward with filing any type of ethics complaints. And that's what he was saying he was going to do. Then they tried to file an amendment, Congressman LaHood out of Illinois, who's a rather respected member and a fairly moderate member from the Republican side, decided to get involved and try to file an amendment that would prevent a lame duck congressman from filing an ethics complaint, basically taking away a right that exists for every other member of Congress. And when they realized how that was going to play on the outside, they took that down too.
Let me just make a quick comment on that.
To block mail. You know, we can send mail to our colleagues. They made it very difficult for a while for us to get that out, but we've worked with the House Administration Committee and have gotten around that. So as far as reprisals, I'm sure they'll keep it coming, and I'm sure they'll make it personal, but try to make this about me. But at the end of the day, it's not going to be about me.
I just want to make a quick note that trying to take away a lame duck congressman's right to file ethics complaints, just a quick little note of history. It was a lame duck Congress that filed impeachment charges against President Clinton. They did it after the election because they knew that when those new Democratic members of Congress were coming in right after the 1998 elections when Democrats won, they knew they might not get impeachment. So it's just kind of ironic.
Well, that is ironic, Mark, but there's been all sorts of irony. Perhaps the best was when Tom DeLay was saying that he really didn't like this kind of politics of personal destruction.
Yeah, when this is a man who practices it. Actually, give our listeners a couple examples of Tom DeLay practicing the politics of personal destruction, if you would.
Well, the best, I guess, is when he accused, I forget what his comment was regarding rape when Bill Clinton was in the White House, but of course he set up a whole war room in the House so that he could disseminate misinformation during the impeachment process. But I guess now when the shoe's on the other foot, he thinks there should be different rules.
Let me ask you this, Congressman. You said if the House ethics complaint goes ahead, I mean, you filed the complaint. Okay, Tom DeLay gets a chance to answer. Aren't they required by law to go ahead? Don't they have to?
Well, they have different routes that they can take. One is that they can just decide to reprimand Congressman DeLay without going forward with a full-scale investigation. And then, of course, the others would require an investigation, and because the other alternatives would be censure or expulsion the House. And so certainly they wouldn't take those steps without a full-scale investigation. But there is one avenue available to them where they could avoid it. But we're hopeful, given the amount of publicity, certainly on the Hill, regarding this matter, that they won't choose to do that. And the other thing that I think we have on our side is that a lot of independent ethics groups, probably the main one, is Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, also known as CREW, and they actually helped us draft the complaint. But now they've joined with other independent groups that are concerned about the ethics in the House of Representatives, advocating for a full-scale investigation. I think you'll continue to hear from them as we go forward.
So we should know within a month or two whether a full-scale investigation is going to happen?
That's my hope. They have to make a decision within 45. He has this 30-day window to respond, and then they're supposed to decide whether within 45 days whether to go forward with a full-scale investigation. They can utilize one delaying tactic and ask for an additional 45 days before making that decision. My hope would be, given the sensitivity of this, that they will go ahead and move forward within the original 45-day window. But the other argument is, given the fact that it is so incredibly sensitive involving the majority leader of the House, that they may opt to take that second 45 days. Regardless, they can't get past the fall. My hope is that at the very least, by the fall, that they will have decided to go forward with a complete investigation.
Congressman Bell, I know you have to go soon. I want to just take one more call, if I could. Caller,
sure.
You're on the line with Mark Levine and Congressman Chris Bell of Texas.
Hi. First of all, I'd like to recommend you for what you did in Congress. That was great.
Could I ask your name and where you're from?
I'm from Maryland, and I'm a Republican.
Okay, interesting.
But there's a lot of Republicans that are just fed up with what's going on. These people are not Republicans that are, there's a lot of Republicans that know that these people are not Republicans. There's a lot of decent Republicans but they're fed up with it anyway, and they're not going to vote Republican this year. But
I respect that. I really do, because I think people should put their nation above their party. I want to know from Congressman Bell, do you have some support among Republicans in Congress?
Interestingly, I keep hearing that from Democratic colleagues, because obviously the public line has to be that they don't support what I'm doing, and I completely understand that. But from Democratic colleagues who have Republican friends, they keep saying, trust me, there are a lot of folks who wouldn't mind seeing this go forward at all.
You have to remember that, we respect the Constitution is more important than the party.
Absolutely.
But what I wanted to ask you was, I know that there's also a suit that's going on down in Texas.
Right.
Will any of this, between what you've done and what's going on in Texas, change anything as far as DeLay not coming back in the fall, or changing the redistricting back, or even changing some of these bills that have been passed because of his strong-arming?
Let me try to take them one by one. The redistricting now lies with the U.S. Supreme Court. If they decide to hear the case, they could change it. That's the only way that will be changed. As far as the other, there is a civil lawsuit and a criminal investigation pending in Travis County, which is in Austin, Texas, as we speak. That grand jury is expected to take some action. Whether they include action against Congressman DeLay remains to be seen. How the lawsuit plays out, we don't know. It would not change redistricting. Actually, that was involving another election, some state representatives who felt like illegal money was used against them. They have filed that lawsuit. As far as what I have filed, if there's an investigation by the Ethics Committee, they find wrongdoing, they can recommend censure or expulsion to the House of Representatives. And sometimes when it gets to that point, the person in that position simply chooses to step down, as was the case with Jim Wright and with Newt Gingrich later on. And then there's a quicker path, and that is Mr. DeLay faces opposition for re-election in November.
Any hope of that turning out?
And it could. He's raising a lot of money. His opponent's raising more money than anyone who's ever run against DeLay. It's a tough district, but given all of his problems, and my understanding is that these ethics complaints, people are finally waking up and taking note of them and don't like what they see going on.
Colin, does that answer your question?
Just one other thing.
Real quick.
As far as the votes that have gone on so far in this, like, past year, I mean, these terrible things that have happened.
Where they switch votes at the last minute, you mean?
Yeah, well, any of it. I mean, nothing out there is for the people. But can any of those, like Medicare, be relooked at? Or any of these votes be relooked at and brought up?
Oh, I assure you that if the Democrats take the majority back in the House, then the Medicare vote would be looked at. The Medicare prescription drug issue would be looked at immediately, and we would begin the process to undo what was done.
Mr. Bell, is there anything that a Republican, like our caller, can do to change her party so that it is more, let's say, reflective of the common person?
Well, I think continue to weigh in. What's happened to both parties, quite honestly, is that they're controlled by extremists, and they're controlled in the way these congressional districts are drawn. The most extreme candidate wins either on the Democratic side or the Republican side, and so you go to the House of Representatives that's supposed to be representative of the politics of America. Instead, it's representative of the two extreme viewpoints, and you have a large group of people who really don't care to work with each other. And so you have this kind of gridlock and polarization, and nothing really happened. I mean, Mark, you know this. When was the last time some really positive major legislation was passed by Congress? It's just not happening. The only thing that they can point to lately is this prescription drug bill, which is an absolute
horrible
nightmare for seniors.
Yeah. Caller, I want to thank you for your call.
Thank you.
I'm glad you
brought up the fact about the extremists on the Democratic
side. It's on both sides. I think that's what's happened. And, the folks who find themselves in the middle, both whether they lean more Democrat or lean more Republican, they're really going to have to start getting involved in the primary process.
Thank you for your call. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I know you have to go soon, Congressman. And in fact, I want to talk after the break a little bit more about what the caller and you just talked about, how the gerrymandering works and develops to a more left Democrats and more right Republicans. Just one last question before you go. It's from an emailer and wants to know what he can do as a New Yorker to aid your efforts or at least mitigate DeLay's crooked behavior. What can someone outside of Texas do to help you? Anything?
Well, there are several there's several groups that will probably be advocating. If you really wanted to get involved, I would contact Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. It's also known as CREW. I don't have their phone number handy, but I'm sure it would be very easy to find. They're going to continue to be involved and work with other interest groups on this very subject. And if he wants to follow what is going on, be sure to check in on my website, which is house.gov/bell. And www.house.gov/bell.
Okay.
And that'll take you to my website, and we'll be providing updates. That's my congressional website, so we can keep people updated that way.
If it's not there, try bell.house.gov. You can also Google to find any member of Congress and find their website. Congressman Bell, you only promised me a half hour, and I took you 8 minutes over, but I want to thank you very much for coming here on the Inside Scoop, and even more for having the courage to file the ethics complaint that you filed.
Thanks a lot, Mark. I'd be glad to come back anytime.
Terrific. Listen, I know they've got a lot of people that have called in. We will get to your calls. This conversation isn't over. We're going to leave Congressman Bell. He's got a lot of important work to do. But the conversation is not over. So hang on the line, if you would. And we're going to be right back right after these messages. We're going to talk about what the caller from Maryland brought up, how it is that gerrymandered districts lead to more left Democrats and more right Republicans. It's a very interesting thing we haven't talked about much. I want to talk in general about the gerrymandering. And then at the very end of the hour, I want to tell you about a special plan by the Democratic vice presidential candidate, Senator Edwards, to fight terrorism long before September 11th. So stay tuned. More of The Scoop right after this.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. SEIU is hoping to move labor union organizing into the 21st century with a new internet-based organizing campaign targeting people who don't have access to unions. The new affiliate got its name from SEIU's signature color and is called PurpleOcean.org. SEIU's president, Andrew Stern, says he came up with the idea of an internet approach to organizing from Howard Dean's campaign for the Democratic presidential nominee. However, it's not clear what...
...and maintenance workers at the Pilgrim Nuclear Power Plant in Plymouth, Massachusetts, scheduled to begin on Tuesday, has nearby residents worried about safety. Citizen groups, as well as the union representing the workers, have petitioned federal regulators to shut it down if a strike occurs. The plant's owners plan to bring in replacement staff, but some citizens worry that the replacements won't handle the quirks of the 33-year-old reactors as well as a veteran plant engineer. The plant provides power to the city of Boston, which is hosting the Democratic National Convention at the end of this month. The union, which represents about 400 of the less than 600 employees at the plant, hopes that the potential of power disruptions during the convention because of an ongoing strike will give them some negotiating leverage.
Unite and HERE, traditionally textile and hotel employees unions, voted to merge together yesterday, becoming one of the largest labor unions in the United States with over 445,000 members. The president of Unite, Bruce Rayner, is now heading up the Unite Here union. He says the merger has freed up millions of dollars that were being spent on maintaining two bureaucracies that can now be used to organize new members. Both HRE and Unite have historically represented a mostly immigrant and low-income workforce.
Spain's largest airline has announced it is closing its hub and laying off more than 100 employees at Miami International Airport because of security hassles. The primary reason cited by Iberia Airlines was the new Homeland Security Directive that requires most foreigners to get U.S. visas just to pass through American airports. The airline now plans to bypass U.S. soil and fly passengers heading to Latin America to airports in Guatemala and Panama.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Census Bureau reports that 43 million Americans do without health insurance today, but that's only part of the story. According to a study by the nonpartisan healthcare advocacy group, Families USA, a total of 81.8 million Americans went without healthcare for all or part of 2002 and 2003. That's one in three Americans under the age of 65. Going without was defined as not having health insurance for 9 months or more.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Welcome back to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop, bringing you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. If you've been listening, you've heard some really incredible things going on about an ethics complaint filed by our guest, Congressman Chris Bell of Texas, against the most powerful man in Congress, Tom DeLay, a guy that I've called one of the four horsemen of the apocalypse. It seems to me there are four people running our country that are both evil and intelligent. And I've announced those before. Sometimes I make people guess, but I'll just go ahead and say them. In Congress, there's only one, and it's Tom DeLay, who is of sufficient maliciousness and intelligence to be on my list. Again, I guess it's a sign of respect, at least for my four horsemen, and that I respect the fact that they're smart enough to do the malicious deeds they do. On the Supreme Court, there's, of course, Justice Scalia, who fits my level of maliciousness and intelligence. And in the administration, there are two. Obviously, the president is not one of them. He's malicious, but not so intelligent. The two I say that are also running the country are Vice President Dick Cheney and Karl Rove, the guy behind the scenes who's running Bush's political campaigns and trying to make everything George Bush does to get him reelected. So those are my four horsemen of the apocalypse, the four guys running the country, Cheney, Rove, Scalia, and Tom DeLay. In any case, today we're talking about Tom DeLay, who has run the House with an iron hand, run the House of Representatives, and in many ways, the Congress. Tom DeLay was a former pest control guy. He's really made it pretty far since then with his cunning and his use of money. As you see, we have Westar giving him $25,000 and getting millions in return. It's a nice little quid pro quo. This is a guy who knows how to play politics, who knows how to twist arms. He also knows how to catch flies. I should tell you there's a very popular story going around that I have every reason to believe is true, that Tom DeLay was at a meeting. I guess it was a conference committee meeting where everyone was talking and there was a fly bugging everyone, and out came out his old pest control skills. He reached out and grabbed the fly by the wings and I guess removed them. In any case, I don't mean to knock pest control people. This is a guy who has every bit of as much intelligence and guile to win votes, to twist votes. In fact, here's how it worked in Congress. And I'm really interested in the woman from Massachusetts, the Republican moderate woman who called in. I wish I'd gotten her name, but I want to thank you very much for your call because I think you typify the problem with Tom DeLay and his control of the Republican Party. There used to be a moderate Massachusetts Republican, she was actually one of the few. Connie Morella was her name. And what Tom DeLay would do is Connie Morella, for example, was from a very Democratic district. She was sort of an anomaly. She's been replaced, and I'm glad, and I'll tell you why, by Democrat of Maryland, Chris Van Hollen. But Connie Morella would vote with the Democrats and vote against the bills that aided the big corporations whenever the Republicans didn't need her vote. So the way it worked is like this. Tom DeLay would keep a list of Republicans, and he would put them from sort of most vulnerable, Connie Morella was the most vulnerable, a Republican from a Democratic district, to least vulnerable. And the Republicans would say, you know what, Tom DeLay, we don't want to vote on this bill. We don't want to vote to help polluters. We don't want to vote to take away money from seniors and give it to big healthcare corporations. We don't want to vote to give this huge tax cut to the rich. Whatever they didn't want to vote on, they would let Tom DeLay know. And Tom DeLay would release them, much as you might, I don't know, release dogs or horses. He would keep them in his pen, and he would release them and say, all right, we have the votes to pass our trade bill. We have the votes to pass our giveaway to corporations bill. So, Connie Morella, you don't have to vote our way. And then she would go out, and she'd vote with the Democrats, and then say, look what a moderate Republican I am. But what happens when the votes are close, and this is what Congressman Bell was talking about, what happens when the votes are close is he starts calling in those chits. He starts saying, as he did on the fast-track bill, Robin Hayes of South Carolina, we really need you. We have lost this bill, okay? The Democrats have voted against giving us this trade authority that doesn't take account of workers' rights and pollution, and you voted against us, and so I'm going to hold the vote open, and I'm not going to let the gavel fall. I'm not going to let this vote end until you change your mind. And so, with Robin Hayes literally crying on the floor, this—I don't know how old he is, probably in his 70s, 70-year-old man, congressman from South Carolina, he has a name, Robin, but he is a man, was literally crying on the floor because he knew that textile workers in his district did not want this trade bill. But his first loyalty was to Tom DeLay. His loyalty was to Tom DeLay over his own constituents. And so what Chris Van Hollen of Maryland argued in his last election, and I was afraid he wouldn't get it understood because Connie Morella was certainly one of the most liberal of Republicans, one of the most moderate of Republicans, but Chris Van Hollen let his constituents understand that when push came to shove, Connie Morella was a Republican first and a moderate second. She was a Tom DeLay supporter first and a moderate second. And the woman from Maryland who called is absolutely right. The moderates are being pushed out of both parties, and let me explain how that works. You see, the district lines are drawn by the state legislatures. And that's what's called gerrymandering. And what you do is, if you have a state that's controlled entirely by one party, let's say Texas, okay? Texas has a Republican, lower house, an assembly, a Republican Senate, and a Republican governorship. If you control all three branches of government like that, then you get to redraw the district lines. Now, the way it works is, the Constitution provides that every 10 years there's a census. And that's important because the House of Representatives is supposed to represent the population. As we all know, the Senate represents the states. There's two senators from every state in the Senate. But the House of Representatives is done by population. That's why California has 50-something representatives and Delaware has one, because California's got, you know, 50 times the population of Delaware. So that's all well and good, but we all know that populations change. 100 years ago, California was not the largest state in the United States. It was just joining the Union in 1850. So you got to change it, and the Constitution provides. Every 10 years you recount, you do a census, you know, you fill out that census form, and you count all the Americans. And so, you know, sometimes California gains a district, New York loses a district. We all know that people in the Northeast tend to be leaving and moving to the South and West. And that's all well and good. And until 2 years ago, the tradition was you only change the district lines every 10 years. 10 years comes around, and you have to change the district lines because, okay, you've added a member of Congress or you've subtracted one, all right? If you've got a state that's got 10 members of Congress and they get one more, it's 11, well, you have to redraw the districts, and you'd redraw lines so that the people are divided into 11 equal piles instead of 10. Again, no problem with that. And this was done every 10 years. It's a highly political decision. Please understand that drawing these lines means a lot. These aren't just lines on a map. Think about how you would draw a line on a map. Let's just take a really simple example because it's important to understand how gerrymandering works. All right, we've got a state, and it's got, it has 30 people in it. And you got 15 Democrats and 15 Republicans, okay? Let's change my example. 20 Democrats, 20 Republicans, and you've got 4 seats in Congress. Okay? Now you could divide it, put 5 Democrats and 5 Republicans in each of the 4 seats. That would give each an equal chance to win. And then you'd have, I guess, fair representation. But if you're a Republican and you control the state, well, here's what you do. You put all 10 Democrats in one district. They're going to vote overwhelmingly, 100% for the Democratic candidate. And then you split the other 10 Democrats among overwhelming Republicans. So it's 7-3, 7-3, 6-4. I hope you're following my math here. The point is if you group all the Democrats in one district together, then you can take the rest and you have majority Republicans even in a state that's equally split. It's very important you understand how this works because in Florida, for example, the state is clearly equally split. A slight majority of the people preferred Gore over Bush in the last election, which is why Al Gore should be president today. But it's basically equally split. They've got 2 Democratic senators. They've got a Republican governor. But their House representation is 18-7 Republican. It's 72% Republican. Now, obviously, if you fairly draw the lines, it's going to be half and half. It's going to be 13-12 or 12-13. But in Florida, sometime, take a look. Go on Google. Take a look at the Florida district maps. You have maps that go grab an African-American area, go out into the ocean for 200 miles, come back, grab another African-American area, go back out into the ocean. And these lines are crisscrossing every which way. The only rule is that they have to be contiguous. They have to be connecting. But there's no rule that says you can't go out in the ocean for hundreds of miles. And so Florida has carefully gerrymandered its districts to make sure that even in a state that should be split 13-12, it's 18-7 for the Republicans. Well, again, as bad as this is, and gerrymandering, I should say, is as old as the Republic. I've mentioned this once on my show before. The word gerrymander comes from Governor Elbridge Gerry of Massachusetts, who back in the 1830s gerrymandered a district, drew district lines, and he drew a district that favored his party that had the shape of a salamander. So a famous political cartoonist, I'm not sure who it was, I think it was Thomas Nast, but don't quote me on it, put wings and a tail and a beak on the creature and said, this is a gerrymander, Elbridge Gerry Salamander, his district. The name caught on, and we have gerrymanders to this day. So it is an old political tradition. But Tom DeLay took it one step further. Instead of doing this every 10 years, which is when the Constitution requires it, Tom DeLay said, we can do it anytime we want. And if we happen to get Republicans in charge now, and we couldn't gerrymander 2 years ago, which they couldn't, we're just going to gerrymander it right now, even though it's not every 10 years. And he has now begun a precedent that I'm sure every party will take of constantly changing the district lines to favor your candidate. The Republicans already have a big advantage in district lines. The clearest example of this is simply look at the Gore-Bush election. As we all know, Al Gore beat George Bush by 540,000 votes, more than 500,000 votes. He beat Bush by more than Carter beat Ford, by more than Kennedy beat Nixon, and by more than Nixon beat Humphrey. Indeed, his margin was three times the Kennedy or Nixon margins. But even so, you would think, okay, Gore wins, 52% of the congressional districts, right? Nope. Nope, he won about 42% of the congressional districts. In other words, by sheer drawing lines on a map, not by votes, because the Democrats have the majority. The people have the majority, but we the people don't get to decide. By sheer drawing of lines, as they've done in Florida, as they've done in Texas, as they've done in Colorado, as they've done in Pennsylvania, they have made sure that even though 51-52% of the people who voted for Gore or Bush voted for Gore, all right, he only got 42% of congressional districts. That is the power of gerrymandering. And, of course, the power of gerrymandering was used against Chris Bell, the very congressman who came on my show in the early half of the hour, because Chris Bell, a Democrat, was thrown in with another Democrat, an African-American, and they were all put together. As I said, that's how you do it. You group all the Democrats together, as I gave in my hypothetical example. If you put all the Democrats together in one district or two or three, then all the others are majority Republicans. So what Tom DeLay did is he took a Democratic Texas, split it into five parts. There's one part in Austin where you can walk, I think it's a mile, and you can be in five different congressional districts. And that's because Austin is one of the few liberal cities in Texas. Split it up among five parts, combined Democratic districts together, and made them run against each other. And now that's why Chris Bell has already lost his primary. And probably what helped give him the courage to file this ethics complaint. I don't want to take from Congressman Bell. I think he did a terrific thing. But he's already out. And so as a lame duck, as he put it, he could file his complaint. But the final step in gerrymandering, and this is very important to understand in this complaint against Tom DeLay. So to do gerrymandering, you've got to get permission from the state legislature. And in Texas, in order to do it outside these 10 years, after the regular session was over, you got to get a two-thirds vote. Well, the Republicans, let me be clear. You had to have two-thirds vote to have a quorum, to have the members there in order to conduct business. You needed a majority once people were there. So the Democrats knew that the Republicans didn't have two-thirds. So in order to deny a quorum, the Texas Democrats, these local state legislators, fled the state. They went to New Mexico, Albuquerque. They went to Ardmore, Oklahoma, as you heard. And they ran out knowing that the state Texas police could only bring them back in, as they were ordered to do. The Republicans ordered the Texas police to find these wayward Democrats and force them back into the Capitol in Austin. But they flew out ahead of time to Ardmore, Oklahoma, and later on to Albuquerque, New Mexico. And there was nothing the Republicans could do. They couldn't pass their nefarious gerrymandering plan. Tom DeLay was in a stew. Here he'd spent $190,000 on money laundering, according to Chris Bell's ethics complaint, to do that, to elect Texas legislatures just so they could do the redistricting, which would cause, a switch of 10 seats in the House of Representatives, and he wasn't getting his way. So what did he do? He contacted the Department of Homeland Security. He'd heard that a plane had left Austin, Texas, and Texas, of course, is a big state. It takes time to leave the state. So he asked our federal Department of Homeland Security, that's supposed to be checking our borders against terrorist attacks, he asked them to check on the plane of the wayward Democrats leaving Texas. That is a clear violation of law, using a federal agency in your partisan political battle, and that's very much one of Chris Bell's complaints, and I hope it's brought before the Ethics Committee. Boy, time sure flies when I'm on a rant, but I do want to tell you, I'm going to have this Monday, you won't want to miss, Jerry Nadler, Congressman of New York, one of my favorite congressmen, coming on my program, coming on the Inside Scoop, to talk about the vote holdover on the Patriot Act yesterday. You won't want to miss all the details of that. It's Tom DeLay at his best, but it's also giving you knowledge about what the Patriot Act is all about and basically how we're trying to restrict it so that the government can't spy on you. You won't want to miss that Monday at 3. And finally, in this last minute, I did promise I would tell you about John Edwards. John Edwards, the Democratic vice presidential candidate, in a front page article in the Washington Post, and I urge you to go to Google and read that article because my time's about up. But John Edwards is one of the foremost authorities in counterterrorism prior to September 11th. Indeed, he wrote a strategy paper that he had a hard time finding anyone to publish it. So while Dick Cheney and George Bush were focused on, you know, getting oil from Iraq, you had John Edwards write a policy paper with specific plans, plans including how to get federal and local officials to cooperate more, plans to get rid of loose nukes. Go ahead, read the Washington Post. I'll go ahead and put a link to it on my blog at www.radioinsidescoop.com. Our vice presidential candidate, I can't wait till he debates Dick Cheney because he thought of terrorism measures, counterterrorism measures, when Dick Cheney was busy trying to find a new oil pipeline for Halliburton. This is Mark Levine. I'm signing off. I do want to say if you check me out on radiopower.org, they're entirely sponsored by your donations. Go ahead and make one. Keep that progressive radio alive. And also check out my website at www.radioinsidescoop.com. You can hear the show either at radioinsidescoop.com or at radiopower.org, depending on your connection. Go ahead, check it out, contribute to my blog. I'm getting these long, long blog entries where people are arguing it out. That's the way democracy should be. That's the way I like it. And my show this Sunday, 7 o'clock, you won't want to miss that either. We're going to be discussing more about the most powerful man in Congress, Tom DeLay. This is Mark Levine, signing off.